Welcome to For the Love of Dogs with Janis Wolf.
And welcome. And we are going to be having a very informative session today. We're going to be talking about things that you can do to educate yourself while you're home. Here in New Jersey, we just got the order from our governor that we are now going to extend the quarantine for 30 days, which is starting to feel a little bit like the old song. It's starting to feel a lot like Christmas. It's starting to feel a lot like being in prison, even though I shouldn't complain. I mean, I live in a beautiful place. Many of you do. But we really are seeing a lot of people who are really kind of at their wit's end already. And I can understand that because it's really stressful. And a lot of people have ended up going to shelters and buying puppies and all. And I'm hoping that all the people who have taken on that responsibility of having a dog or a puppy, especially during a difficult time like this is unprecedented that we've had, that we can all kind of look around and say, geez, you know, this dog is great, but you've got a lot of time. And I've already talked about separation anxiety we've gone through and discussed so many different ways that you can help your dog and that your dog can help you. So I wanted to go through something today to help everybody to kind of have a place to go and work on. And in the next few weeks, we're going to have some amazing guests. We're going to have a lady who changed her life and lost, I think she's over 150 pounds that she's lost already. We're going to have her on in the upcoming weeks. We're going to have an amazing young man with autism who is trying to make a difference, and he'll be in our shelter dog to service dog section. And we're going to do some of the guests, but today we're going to do something very special, very different. So we're going to go through what Wyatt's list. So everybody always asks me, well, how do I know that, you know, the information I'm finding is legit? You know, how do I know that this is going to be something that is going to be helpful and that I can count on? You'll see if when you go on the internet and if you type in how to fix my aggressive dog, or you go on the internet and you find out, you know, how to, be your dog's boss or whatever. You know, when you do that and you get information, very often the information that you're getting is worth exactly what you're paying for it, zero. You don't know who people are. And what I've learned a long, long time ago is in dogs and horses, everybody's an expert. But with horses, when you claim that you know what you're doing with horses and you get a horse who is going to make you look bad, all of a sudden, the person who goes trail riding and says, yeah, I need a really good horse. I need a really, really good horse because I'm a super experienced rider. You know that they're going to get themselves killed. Those people are always fun when I used to run my horse camps and work with the dogs and the kids and the horses. I used to love when you'd have the parents or somebody who'd go start telling the kids what to do. And I'd say, come on, you get on that horse. And you, oh, no, 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 no. Oh, no, no, I haven't ridden in years. Well, what level did you ride? What? What kind of riding? Oh, I did Western. Oh, what kind of Western? Well, Western. Well, roping, reining, pleasure, you know, barrels, you know, team penning. What did you do? And they go, I just rode Western. I just rode on the trails. So unfortunately, you have that same thing happening a lot with dogs. And with dogs, you'll have people who will be coming to your house and you're counting on their expertise, or people who are grooming your dog or walking your dog or, you know, doing anything like that. And they're telling you, like, if you go to a big box store, and the kids there who are, you know, 18 or 20, and that somebody says, well, what kind of food should I feed my dog? And you're asking a 20-year-old who's working there for $9 an hour and is getting a dollar or $2 bonus from the rep for the company of whoever like goes in and they say, here, I'll give each of you a dollar a bag for how much you sell. So you push that brand instead of maybe a brand that's better. You usually don't have that in the smaller mom and pop stores, which hopefully are going to be around after this whole COVID thing. But I want to go through, and I think it's going to be a super learning experience for everybody. Hopefully when you're doing today, instead of like we normally do where I rant and rave about something that's important or I teach you something specific, I'm going to give you a website to go to. It's called Wyatt's List, WYATTSLIST, wyattslist.com. And yes, it is named after Wyatt. Now, what's really cool about this Wyatt's List is who the contributors are to it. And I don't mean monetary contributors. I mean, who are the people who are telling you things? So you'll see, of course, I'm on it with Wyatt. I wish they would take the picture down because I don't like to have my picture anywhere. I have the perfect face for radio. And I hope you understood what I said, perfect face for radio. Get it? Like you don't see people on the radio. But what's very cool is I list all the different things that we do for, for you guys so that you have good advice. So you'll think how often you call your friend and you go, oh, my friend said 3 dogs. She must know everything. But if you've never had a dog with a behavioral issue, if you've never had a dog that had a special need or a different need, that person doesn't know your dog. And even if that person gives you advice, that person is not an expert. So basically what Wyatt's List is doing, it's going to be giving videos and private and group virtual classes with expert behavioral education and assistance so that you'll have the basically be able to watch a webinar and have these classes where we can do all of this on Zoom. And it's fun because you get to see other people and help other people. And you'll have myself or one of our canine behavioral team who will be moderating it. So it's going to be really fun. There's also going to be advice for boarding, for breeders. How do you find a good dog? How do you find a good boarding facility? I can't even tell you how many times I go to somebody's house and their dog is shy or aggressive or whatever, and they say, the dog was totally fine until, and it's always one of two things. He came back from boarding, he was a different dog, and not for the better. And the other thing is, after my male dog was neutered, he was different. He got aggressive or he got fearful, and there's reason for that, and I can tell you about that. We also have information on, groomers, how to find a good groomer. Nutrition, like what kind of food you should be feeding your dogs and, based on their age and, giving a little more about protein levels and what's in different foods. We even talk about different products and different rescues, how to find a good dog rescue, how to find a shelter. What's the difference between a rescue and a shelter? Because that's really important. A shelter, you don't know as much typically about the dog. A rescue will always take that dog back, although shelters are supposed to, but not every shelter is created even equally. I mean, there are some absolutely gorgeous ones, and there are some hell holes, and there are some very good rescues, and there are some very nasty rescues, and you wouldn't believe there are a lot of people who go into, they create their own rescue, not for the right reason, but egos abound, let's just say that. A lot of people can't get along well with others, so they start their own rescue and badmouth the other rescues. I don't like that. They're all the same dogs, and we should all be helping each other so that there are no dogs in shelters, which is getting pretty close because of this COVID situation. Everybody grabbed dogs and figured, well, this is a good time to grab a dog or a cat. I agree. Just let's make sure that you guys will keep these dogs and cats and other animals after you go back to work. We also talk about things like transportation. So how do you transport a dog? And even now, you can still transport a dog. And I'm not talking about only airplanes and such. There are different services that you can use that will transport your pet. Rehoming. I love that word because we can talk about that. Rehoming is when you have made a commitment to a dog or another animal, pet, and for whatever reason, you can't keep the dog. Now, some people, they're just, I mean, the woman who contacted us and asked if we would take for Great Dane, and we said, well, what's wrong with the dog? And she said, nothing. It's a great dog, just has a lot of energy, but I didn't realize it would get that big. And I said to her, well, that's why they call them Great Danes and not Tiny Danes. And she's like, oh, I don't know. Well, obviously she didn't get the dog. She must have gotten it from a pet store, because no reputable show breeder would in a million years let that go. And also, when you buy through a breeder, a legitimate AKC show breeder of merit particularly, they will take that dog back. They will help you. It's so worth going to somebody who's good and getting a purebred dog from a really good breeder, because it's like buying a good car instead of buying a junker. And I don't mean that rescues are junkers, because they are not. Rescue dogs are just dogs that were owned and ruined by somebody who thought they could be better than somebody else in training a dog. And that's the problem. You need help. You know, not everybody needs help, but if you want to do it right, it's like, you know, I know some people who are pretty horrible drivers, and I sit in the car with them for a half hour and say, hey, instead, especially Jody, if you're listening, you know, who would always hit the brake too much. And, you know, I get very nauseous in the car with her driving. And we drove her out to her radiation oncology residency out in Minnesota. And I said, okay, we're going to drive. First thing you need to do is I'm going to teach you how to brake properly. And I showed her how to ease off on the brake. She said, nobody's ever taught me that. Well, I don't know who taught her how to drive, but that little suggestion, just showing her, made all the difference in the world. And it's the same thing with your dog or with your horse. Very often, it's a very quick and easy fix if you have somebody who knows what he or she is doing. If you don't see results immediately, and I don't mean 100%, but if you don't see results immediately, when somebody's there within an hour, they don't need to be coming back. You'll start seeing what works and what doesn't work. But if somebody says, oh, well, you've got to work on this for the next 14 weeks or the next 5 years, that's crazy. So we're going to be talking about that. We're going to be talking about vet care and what kind of veterinarian to reach out to. We have some experts that, they're amazing. One of our people, Dr. Jason Berg, a Guardian veterinary specialist up in Brewster, New York, is dual board certified in internal medicine and in which is amazing, in neurology, neurosurgery. So just imagine you go three additional and then a fourth year for two more. That's after 4 years of vet school, after 4 years of college. So there are different veterinarians. Even if you're in an area that's not so populated, there are different veterinary centers around the country that would be able to help you. So if God forbid your dog is diagnosed with cancer, or if your dog, you know, blows an ACL or a CCL, you can, that's a ligament in the leg. If you have a problem and your local vet hasn't done, you know, 500 or 1,000 of them, you might want to find a board certified vet. We're going to talk about that and why it's listed as well. Also, which is something very interesting, we have a charity partners program. So there's financial support for shelters and rescue groups through this. And some of the premium services that there is a very, very nominal fee to be a part of, which is a very cool thing. But some of these paid services, we actually donate the money or a large portion of it to charity to help rescues, shelters, and also for kids who need service dogs, and it helps them so we don't have to have these kids or other adults going out and not having what they need. It's always best to help each other, right? We're also going to be having emergency kits and talk about what kind of an emergency kit you should have, and a one-to-one matching donation program with our sponsors for fosters and newly adopted dogs. So if you adopt a dog, and I think it's within a few months after, we'll actually give you kind of some cool things and some free classes and all kinds of things so that you're going to be able to be very, very successful with that. We have a lost pet service. So If you work with us on, and this is through Wyatt's List, if you work with us, we help you find your dog, not just, you know, putting, you know, a little microchip or something, but actually having community members helping each other find your dog. And of course, we have our pet loss and bereavement hotline, which is 855-449-9288, or you can email info@unitedk9pros.com, or you can reach out to us, like I said, on the 800 number. One of the nice things that everybody always asks is what kind of food, toys, and collars, leashes, you know, dog bowls, things like that should I use? Sometimes dogs will have behavioral issues based on a stainless steel shiny bowl because they're afraid of it, or they see their reflection, or a dog who gets protective or possessive over a bowl or a toy or a you know, cookie or a bully stick. So we're going to go through that, and you'll see that on here. Also, of course, you know, when people are moving, you're going somewhere, you're traveling, you know, we're going to give you tips and tricks on that to keep your dog happy and healthy when, you know, now we're getting into almost, well, we thought we were getting into summer because the weather was so beautiful for a few days in the Northeast here. I just spoke with our producer, our engineers who are in California, and they're saying, yeah, it's 82, beautiful day. And I'm like, hey, I'm in Jersey. It's 45 and it's raining and it's gross out. But, you know, when you travel with your dog, depending on where and how far you travel, you also may have, you know, changes in that and altitude and all different kind of things that can impact your dog. And of course, this radio show, we have a blog also with information and advice for people. And, you know, there'll be discounts on products from some of the different companies we deal with. And we're going to give you, which to me is a super important thing, and I talk about it a lot in my last canine behavior book called Happens, S-H-H-H, Happens, Dog Behavior 101, which you can get on Amazon, S-H-H-H, right? Happens, Dog Behavior 101. And it'll also be on Wyatt's List, but there's a lot of nuances in getting a dog. People go out and they, oh, look at this one. It's so cute. And my favorite is when people say, but it was the quietest one. It was like all the other puppies were so nice. This one looked like all the other puppies were picking on it. And I say, no, don't get that one. You say, why not? Because that one is the one who's the pain in the neck, and that's why nobody wants to have anything to do with that puppy, because he's driving everybody nuts. Don't buy that one. So we'll be giving you help in choosing the best dog and the best type of dog, the best age of dog. So what a lot of people are doing now is going out and getting puppies who've never had puppies before. And if we're all going back to work in a month or two, and we all like literally go back to work, what is going to happen when your puppy is 6 months old now? And you've been living with the dog for the puppy this whole time, and here you go. You're going back to work. You're going to have a dog who's going to be unhousebroken. It's not going to have you know, a lot of stability because the dog will never have had people being away. It's going to have a lot of separation anxiety. And I'm going to be very, very, very busy. You can call me at 855-449-9288, and we will get you help. But I'm trying to prevent that for you. The best way, of course, to do anything is to make sure that we're not, you know, going to be creating problems, right? So, you know, we're going to help you with that and finding also the right rescue group, because if we're able to help you to find the right rescue group, like let's say you say, oh, I really want to get a German Shepherd, but there are rescues that specialize in a German Shepherd or in a combination of breeds. Like if you say, oh, I want a poodle mix. There are so many of these poodle mixes that are returned because they have health issues and temperament issues, behavioral issues. They're not quote unquote hypoallergenic, whatever that's supposed to mean. But there are rescue groups, and those are a really great resource because what they'll do is they'll pull a specific type of dog So it's almost like going to a place that only has the type of thing you're looking for. So, you know, when you go to a shelter, and shelters are great, don't get me wrong, I don't want you not to go to shelters, but if you go, and also don't drink bleach, remember that one? Don't drink bleach, okay? But if you go to a shelter, 9 times out of 10, you're going to see probably, you know, at least half of them are going to be pit bulls. Now, if you want a pit bull, go to a shelter. But if you don't want one, if you say, well, you know, it's too big of a dog or too tough of a dog, even though some of them are real sweetie mushes, there are definitely enough of them that are out there that are not sweet and probably, you know, aren't a good choice for many families. But there are also some that would be a great choice for many families. But if you're looking for like a pit bull, then going to a shelter or a pit bull rescue is great. But how about if you say, well, I would love to get, let's say, a pointer of some sort, or I'd like to get some kind of a something that's like a golden retriever-ish dog. So if you contact those rescues will be able to help you by actually showing you, and they're probably foster-based because then they don't need to have a lot of money. They just keep the dogs in people's homes, and that actually works out well because the foster homes are able to figure out if there are any behavioral issues that are going to pop up. So it's great. So think about rescue groups, general rescue, but breed or combination of breed rescues, and looking them up and put your name on a list. You know, those of you who have kids, some people get pregnant at 17 and didn't really want to get pregnant. And then you have people who are in their 40s who have done IVF and everything else and are trying to have kids and can't and finally adopt. And I always think adopted kids are so special because if you were adopted, it means your parents and your mom especially loves you enough so much to bring you into the world. And then another family had to fight. You don't know how hard it is to adopt a child, but they had to fight really hard to get you. And so you were loved twice. Well, we can say the same thing about some of these dogs. They were loved twice. So let's see if you can get them to and fix what you need to, and they can be great dogs. So let's work on trying to, help different places who are kind of looking at, helping dogs. And that's what Wyatt's List. So we have people, we have a number of veterinarians, wonderful veterinarians. We have a holistic veterinarian who is awesome. We have the top veterinary oncologist on the East Coast. Amazing, amazing woman. We have my friend Temple Grandin. Temple has a number of articles, and she and I write a lot of things together and are actually doing some research right now. We have a woman who is an expert in 911 training for dogs. And then we have a lot of other people. We have a number of different veterinarians. So what's really cool about it is that you're not just getting information about one dog, you're actually, or one person. There are just so many people who are experts. And what's really cool, I think, is that we have everybody working together. For instance, people who are the experts in veterinary oncology, people who are experts in neurosurgery, people who are experts, all these different veterinarians and all the cool things that, that are available and out there. And it's really lovely when, you're able to see what is out there and see the amazing people who are on the site. So what I want to do is those of you who are actually listening from home, go to resources on Wyatt's List, and you'll see. And I'm just going to help you on this because, to me, this is a really great opportunity for us all to look and to learn. So if we look at, let's say, dog breeders, okay, which is a second category, and it talks about going to a legitimate breeder. They're going to insist you keep in touch and return the dog if there's ever a problem. We talk about puppy mills, backyard breeders. It explains what, and there's a little general thing, There are sometimes people who buy a purebred dog or a designer dog, and the dogs have so many issues. And it'll just kind of go through explaining to you. And one of my favorites is when people go, I have a purebred Australian schnoodle doodle thing. And you'll say, what? Oh, yeah, it's purebred. Oh, really? It's purebred? What were its parents? Well, its mother is this, this, and this, and its father is this and this. Well, that's kind of if you're Irish, Russian, and Polish, and, you know, your husband is, let's say, from Nepal, and also has Japanese descent, and you're married and you have kids, your kids aren't purebred, right? Your kids are a combination of many different races or ethnicities. Same thing with dogs. A purebred dog, by definition, and it doesn't mean your dog can't be a mix, because, you know, there's all these designer things out there, but the issue is most of the dogs that you get from a good AKC show breeder of merit, especially just good AKC show breeder, not ACC, not ACE, not AKE. There's so many fake registries out there that it's very frustrating. But when you have somebody who is breeding to a standard, what that means is that they are going to breed to better the breed, to make their breed better, to make their breed stronger, to make that dog that you have even better than its parents. And that's what you want. You don't want somebody who, like I say, you know, don't be tricked into believing that a designer dog is a breed. We've seen, quote-unquote, breeders of designer, quote-unquote, breeds telling people the dog is AKC registered because both of its parents are AKC registered. AKC, American Kennel Club, which is the only legitimate registry other than UKC, which does handle some dogs of different breeds that are not accepted yet in America, but those are really the only ones. AKC registered just means that the parentage of both parents is known and pure. So all it means if you have, let's say, a lab poodle mix, and you have that dog, and its father is a poodle and its mother is a lab, it doesn't mean the baby is purebred. It just means that they were purebred. But usually, and it's rare for this not to be the case, people don't go to an AKC show breeder and say, hey, I want a really beautiful AKC show puppy that's got grand champion parents, and I'm going to breed it and mixed breed dogs, and I'm going to breed it to, a chow, and I'm going to make a hairy chow, so I'm going to make a chow poodle mix. A breeder's going to look at you and throw you out the door. So they don't get good quality dogs to start with. They get low quality backyard breeder dogs, a pet store dog, which is usually a backyard breeder or a puppy mill, and you're starting with a parent on each side who really doesn't have good health, who might not have a good temperament, but nobody cares because they're just dumping that puppy and they're making money. And that's all it is. It's about making money. So a purebred show dog that comes from a reputable dog breeder are tested. They have genetic and physical perfection. They want to make sure that the dogs are pure. They have genetic testing for deformities in the joints, the eyes, the heart, congenital conditions in the heart, the ears, the bone structure, and, you know, different things that the dogs could potentially have. Just remember, any kind of true dog breeder breeds to better the breed, not to make money. And most breeders of champion and grand champion show dogs, we lose money. I lose money. I will never make money breeding dogs, because if I wanted to make money, I'd be breeding doodle things and shit poodle things and shih tzu Yorkie things and Maltese, you know, whatever, poodle, whatever. And I'm not knocking these combinations, but you have to understand that when you are getting a dog who is not purebred, and I don't mean just purebred, but that's not from a show breeder who's checking all the health and temperament issues and standing behind their dog, you're just getting your dog, and probably the parents are going to just be bred every 6 months until they can't breed anymore. It's just kind of a tough thing, you know, and it's very sad when you see how people are really trying to pull the wool over the eyes of, you know, other people who are, you know, just looking to get a good pet, you know, just looking to get a good puppy. So let's go through, how about under, let's look for, oh, service dogs. Let's look up service dogs. So if you say, what is a service dog? Because everybody confuses that. It drives everybody nuts. But they say, what's a service dog? A service dog is a well-behaved, non-aggressive dog trained specifically to mitigate a disability. So a service dog, which we're going to talk about in the next section, service dog must be task trained. And maybe I'll actually hold this for the next section, because a pet, an emotional support dog, is not a service animal, okay? A service animal can only be a miniature horse, according to ADA, Americans with Disabilities Act of 1990, revised in 2011. If you need a service dog is going to mitigate a disability, whereas having, a dog who's just kind of there and its very presence makes you feel better. I mean, to me, every dog pretty much is a therapy dog and is an emotional support dog. That's why we get dogs, right? We get them because they're wonderful. And it doesn't matter if they have health issues, if they're inbred, if they're grand champion show dogs, best in show dogs, worst in show dogs, born under a trailer. It doesn't matter. Dogs are godly. They're just wonderful. That's why our show is called For the Love of Dog, because God and dog are the same three letters, just backward. And if you get it right, you'll see that you'll have the best dog in the world, but you got to put a little work into it. So we're going to actually come back in the next section talking about definitions of service dogs, therapy dogs, and emotional support dogs, and companion dogs, and you're going to understand everything after, and you're going to love it. So stay tuned. We will be right back. Welcome to From Shelter Dog to Service Dog with Janice Wolf. And today we're talking about a wonderful website called Wyatt's List, W-Y-A-T-T-S-L-I-S-T, wyattslist.com. Yes, it's named after the amazing Wyatt. And the reason that we're going through the website today is there's just so much bad and misinformation out there on the internet. And I mean, I see people like, oh, we're the number one, you know, internet advisor for dog training. Like, really? I mean, and everybody who uses their own name, that just drives me nuts. It's not Janice's List. It's Wyatt's List, right? If anytime people start naming things after themselves, it's just a personality defect, I think. It's, I mean, listen, you know, fine. If you're good at something, it's fine to be proud, but we don't need to hear your name constantly. If you're good, people are going to know who you are because you're good. You shouldn't have to self-promote. You know, my one thing my brother always said was self-praise is no praise. So don't have to use your name. And it just, go out and help dogs, go out and help people, do good things for good reasons, and people will know you. They're going to talk nicely about you. And there's always going to be a few people out there who are jealous of you or who, you know, for whatever reason are just nuts. And, you know, you can't fix it. You know, you can't fix stupid, you can't fix crazy, and you can't fix people who are just so jealous and envious of others. So go have your life, go do good stuff, and just go do good things because they're good things. So we're going to go into today, we're going to talk about the difference between a service dog, we're going to talk about therapy dogs, emotional support dogs, companion dogs, and pet dogs. So really, if you look at Wyatt's List, WYATTSLIST.com, you'll see that Wyatt's List contains sections, and it's still being built out. It's a pretty huge website, but it's still being built out. And what we're trying to do is educate people so that people actually can get good advice instead of you going out there and, you know, trusting and you say, oh, look, well, the kid at Walmart said I should be using Old Roy. Well, that's all they have, like garbage food, or somebody, local person who was, you know, working in a bakery and got fired when the bakery laid them off, and now they're a dog trainer, or they were a financial planner, now they're a dog trainer. You know, it's very scary that there's no licensing and there's really no follow through. You know, when people call me, they don't say, oh, hi, I never heard of you. They say, oh, I was referred by this veterinarian or that veterinarian, or I was referred by this trainer, or I was, in, you know, referred to you by, you know, I asked three of my friends who I should go to because I've got a problem with my dog, and they all said you. That's where you know you're doing things right, not when you self-promote. So let's talk about a little bit about the difference with a trainer. How can, if you're a local dog trainer, and let's say you're a good local obedience trainer, does that mean you know how to train a service dog? Hell no. You have no idea to make a dog automatic, not to have a dog that sits and lies down, because that does not make a service dog. A service dog is the highest level where a dog has to actually be well-behaved, non-aggressive, trained specifically to mitigate a disability. So the difference is that a service dog has to be task-trained, meaning that the dog is an active participant in mitigating the disability or the effects of the disability on its owner. So let's say, like, for example, a dog can be trained specifically to alert a person when their blood sugar is too low or too high. Perhaps the dog can stabilize its handler physically, hold the person up from falling, things like that. That is definitely an example of mitigating a disability. And those of you who don't know what mitigate means, it means lessen or make it better. You mitigate something by improving it, but mitigating it doesn't remove it. It doesn't make it go away. So we can't give you a service dog and you're, let's say you fall over and you're not going to fall over anymore. The dog is going to prevent that and mitigate or lessen the severity and intensity of what happens. It's not going to change the underlying condition. Because I've actually had, unbelievably, I had a woman ask me if the dog, if we gave them a dog, which obviously we didn't, was her son going to still have autism? And yeah, that's what I did too. I was like, the dog isn't changing your diagnosis. It's not changing your son's DNA. The dog is just going to track him if he starts to run off. Although tracking is kind of a joke because a properly behaved, well-trained service dog for autism shouldn't let the kid get out of its reach. So I always love when you see these, oh, I need a dog who tracks. It, we call it light tracking. In other words, the kid walks in the other room. But the dog should know if it's well-trained, well-behaved, and well-matched to the child or adult. For sure, if that child starts wandering off, that dog should be preventing the child from wandering, not tracking him after 3 hours, because that means the dog didn't want to be with the kid. But anyway, you get an idea. So another idea, another example would be, let's say if we say, because we call that a tether dog. So sometimes, like for a service dog, it could be a dog for an autistic child, and the dog would prevent the child from wandering off through the use of a vest and tether or a belt tether or even a wrist tether, which are all the different things that we utilize. We were actually the first ones to use these different methods, and people have, imitation is a sincerest form of flattery. People through the last 35 years have copied our methods, and we're very grateful and very honored and flattered that people have seen some of the work we've done and have been able to, utilize our work to help train properly you know, other service dogs and do a good job of it. Now, a service dog, and the whole key here, let's say a child or an adult, but specifically let's say a child who has cortisol spike. Cortisol is a stress hormone, but what happens is your adrenal glands typically will be triggered and the adrenaline is released when cortisol is present. It's like a kind of a process. So imagine you start getting anxious. Your cortisol starts rising. Cortisol rises, it triggers your adrenal glands to release adrenaline. And then that's where all the things happen, the problems happen. So if our dogs are able, many of our dogs are trained on cortisol detection. So in other words, somebody gets stressed, and it takes months. It's not something that happens in a day or a week. I mean, it takes months and months, sometimes 6 months. The guide dog agencies say it takes about a year till you get the dog to work properly with the person. You know, dogs can have funky behaviors when they first get there for the first couple of months because, you know, the people aren't trainers, right? And the people might not have a clue of how to do it. We include so much training for families, and unless they just don't get it and don't understand, it works out great. It's pretty amazing to watch. So let's say somebody starts getting stressed and they have a service dog from us. So the dog would actually smell their breath and would do whatever the command was that it was trained on, but not a verbal command, not a spoken command. Our dogs do things automatically, because if you had to give a verbal command or a hand signal or whatever, and how about if you're having stress, you're not going to remember to do the hand signal. So the dogs can actually provide deep pressure therapy, which we call comfort. So the dog will lay on the person or lean up against the person or block the person or do whatever we teach them to do. It's pretty cool. Now, a service dog undergoes somewhere between 1 to 2 years of training, and I'm not talking about once in a while. I mean, our service dogs in training, and when we place our service dogs at Merlin's Kids, we place them typically when they have 1,000 to 2,000 hours of work, and people say, how is that possible? Well, if we work just 1 year, so let's call it 50 weeks, and we work, let's say, 20 hours a week for 50 weeks, there's 1,000 hours, and that's nothing. We work these dogs much more than that, and we work them for longer. So they will have at least 1,000 to 2,000 hours and 1 to 2 years of training. So, you know, a dog who somebody says, oh, yeah, I can train it in 5 weeks, you know, send it to me, they can't. The dog has to get used to things. It has to learn. And once it learns, it has to go in service and try those things in different locations. And that's one of the biggest problems where you get these people, either self-trained, owner-trained dogs or people who are, you know, local trainers or not trainers or whatever they call themselves. And these people, you know, they'll say, oh, look, the dog is perfect. Well, yeah, it's perfect in your basement with a shock collar or e-collar, whatever you want to call them. But now take the dog out into a crowded mall, and the dog's like, oh, my God, oh, my God. So it's really important to have somebody who's reputable training your dog. We do that at Merlin's Kids, and we do that also United Canine Professionals, and I do that privately as well, as does my staff, so that if somebody wants to train a service dog, you can actually send the dog to us. We work with you and the dog and teach you, and then you take the dog back, and then we work more with the dog, and then we take the dog back, and then we give you the dog back, and we just keep seeing how it works. But you have to be a part of the training process, right? If you're not a part of the training process, it's not going to work. So then the dogs get 3 to 6 months additional to that, all that training of public access exposure. So they're not reactive to their surroundings. They have to be able, I mean, we go to Broadway shows where we used to, right, before COVID, go to the mall, go in the car all the time, go, we're all these different places so that people and the dogs get exposure in all these different areas. Also, for a service dog, the dog has to be generally between 3 to 6 feet of the handler in order to be able to move independently in case they have to retrieve something, open a door. They shouldn't need to be restrained on a leash, but they usually are on a leash. And nobody should be petting or approaching or talking to a service dog if it's, you know, in a vest especially, because it doesn't need to have a vest. But if the dog has a vest on, please be respectful of that. So a service dog is a dog who is going to help somebody with a disability to mitigate that. And these dogs are not the ones who are protected by the ADA, but the rights of the person and the trained service dog who accompanies the person are protected by the Americans with Disabilities Act, provided they're with their trainer or with their handler, their owner. Then you have a psychiatric service dog. Now, psychiatric service dog is no less of a service dog, and we're not talking about a like an emotional support dog. We're talking about a psychiatric service dog. This is the one that is a very gray area with airlines now, because to me, we don't call them psychiatric service dogs, because then people say, oh, what's wrong with you? Well, there's nothing wrong with you. But listen, people with psychiatric issues have a chemical imbalance that causes it. So it is a physical disability. It's just that, you know, you can walk, you can see, but that doesn't mean that you're not disabled. It's a silent and kind of invisible disability. So a psychiatric service dog is a specific type of service dog who can mitigate the effects of a psychiatric issue or disability. So these dogs are task trained and are active participants in the process, so that the dogs are actually, let's say, for instance, a typical task could include maybe an owner who's having a panic attack. The dog can guide the owner having the panic attack to a safe place, perhaps applying deep pressure, comfort across by maybe laying across the lap or blocking other people from approaching the owner. So what you don't want to do for sure is ever approach that person and dog. And the dog should not be barking or anything unless it's a direct alert. And then we have, you know, other things about, because what I'd like to do is go through emotional support dogs. So an emotional support dog has need for no training, although we are trying to change that. Emotional support dog is just a dog that it makes you feel better, which to me, every dog is an emotional support dog. That's why we get them. That we are lobbying to try to have any emotional support dogs that go on airplanes or go into the public places, which they're not allowed via ADA, and you have to have a disability. Remember, Americans with Disabilities Act only doesn't cover the dog, it covers you and your ability to take the dog based on the fact that the dog is able to mitigate a disability. If you don't have a disability, you cannot qualify for ADA for a service dog. You can have an emotional support dog, but an emotional support dog doesn't need to have any training. And those are the ones that we're starting to see a lot of problems on airlines, although now nobody's flying really. So you got to look at this and say, okay, why then are people trying to get their dogs to have this emotional support dog status? Well, because if you are in a housing development, or you're going to fly and you want to get your dog in that place, even though it's not permitted, if you get a doctor's note from somebody for $20 to $100 online, and some, you know, unscrupulous social worker somewhere is going to say, oh, yes, you know, you're a patient, and here's the letter for you to, so that you don't have to pay the $150 pet or $125 pet fee, or you can have the dog in the house. But an emotional support dog, so is there any training? No, it's kind of a little bit of BS. To me, if you need that dog that desperately and you really can't function without the dog, you need to have your dog professionally trained by somebody who literally is a canine behaviorist and has trained hundreds of service dogs like we have. I've trained over 1,300 service dogs and over 30 to 35,000 dogs with behavioral issues that I've rehabilitated. So I've done a lot, and I can train most dogs, but I can't train every dog because every dog is not going to be appropriate for a service dog. So sometimes you'll have a dog who's the best dog in the world and does skills, but it's not good in public. I remember seeing this beautiful little, obviously not well-bred, but very cute little rust-colored golden retriever, And I was with Wyatt, and we were, oh no, I was with Savannah at FDIC about 3 or 4 years ago, and in Indianapolis during the Indianapolis Convention Center for the Fire Department Investigators Conference. And as I was walking with my friend Cindy, who's going to be a guest next week on our show, this little dog was growling and barking, and the woman at Savannah, and the woman was kind of holding her and trying to cover the dog's face and eyes, and it was really like odd. And I said, oh, no, my dog's very friendly. And she said, no, mine's not. And I look in here. She's got a vest that says service dog. And I said, is your dog in training? She says, no, it's my service dog. It's all trained already, and it's certified. And I'm like, whoop, as soon as you say certified, that's scary because that means you're in some fake registry. But the key is if you need a service dog because you need an emotional support dog, you need to get the dog properly trained. You can do it, too. It's not that you have to get a professional, but we're going to have actually seminars and webinars on how to train your own dog to be a service dog. So these are things that can be very, very helpful for people. Then we have a good old the therapy dog, and, of course, the therapy dog is a dog who is, is usually they have a little bit of training, like maybe 8 hours or so. And they can go into a nursing home. And those dogs usually, they don't need a lot of training. They're just good dogs. They're just those good dogs that some people and some dogs are just, they're just great dogs. And they're very gentle and they're very patient. And you're able to, to train that dog. So, a lot of things happen. And, we're going to go into a lot more things next week. And we are so grateful that everybody is with us, and we hope that you're going to be hopefully having a good, healthy, happy weekend, and hopefully this COVID is going to get taken care of, and we're all going to be in a whole lot better place next week, next month, and certainly hopefully by the fall. God bless. I hope everyone has a wonderful, wonderful day and weekend, and we'll see you next week. Take care.